We discuss the Baltimore Ravens ceiling and their floor with a very special guest next here on Locked On Ravens.
You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we return here with another episode of Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Allstriker of Ravens Wire. We're here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On Ravens your first listen of the day. We're free and available on all platforms, and we're here to round out the week of Friday once again. And back with us is former Ravens wide receiver and a Super Bowl champion, of course, Kadri Ismail. Q, I know we're, again, just counting down the weeks until training camp begins. It's getting closer. How you doing?
I'm doing great, and you're right. I mean, this is the part of the year where I really start to love, because, you know, the speculation of what is who and who is what kind of goes out the window. Now it's the great game of a meritocracy where you got to go out there and prove it. You got to lace it up. You got to feel your talents, both physically and mentally, can shape up and measure up, if you will, against other guys. So, I'm loving it. I'm loving the fact that this is it. This is where it all gets real.
Yeah. And I think someone who did prove it and has proven it over the course of the last couple of seasons here is Mark Andrews, and someone who I did talk about yesterday in terms of Darren Waller's tight end rankings. Someone who, hey, I respect his confidence having himself up there at number one. Now, is he actually the number one tight end in the league? Maybe not, but I do think that he is in that top five conversation, maybe not top three conversation. If you didn't see or hear about it, for anybody who's listening, Darren Waller ranked his top five tight ends on a podcast, and he had himself at number one. He had actually Mark Andrews at number five, which was pretty interesting. Q, I think Mark Andrews, instead of top five conversation, for me, it's at least, at the very minimum, top three.
You know, it's interesting. With Darren Waller, I get it, you know. I wouldn't necessarily say in my time that if I was ranking myself as a receiver, I'd put myself with Michael Irvin, Jerry Rice, and, Andre Rison or Herman Moore, or even my teammate Chris Carter. But in my mind, I know as a competitor, I need to think confidently in my game. And obviously now with social media, everything is right out there in the front. Like you're going to, you know, get a direct right away response from the fan base if you put yourself out there. And I think he put himself out there. I think he, you know, talent wise, he certainly has all the tools. You know, what we saw week one, what he did to the Ravens last season was remarkable. You saw how he can, you know, as soon as you put a linebacker on him, he's gone. If you over cover him, Derek Carr is good enough to get off of him and go somewhere else and make the team pay. And so he commands a lot of attention. He's a very productive guy, but, you know, to say he's number one, yeah, you know, it's a stretch. And then, you know, with Mark Andrews, I just don't even see where you would put him at number five. He's coming off his best year, career year, the way in which, you know, he was just being a dominant force. You know, the one of the things we talked about before we came on air was the fact that he had so many different quarterbacks once Lamar Jackson went down, and he remained productive. He remained a go-to threat. Guys and defenses tried to, you know, get a, you know, different looks against him and stop him, but they couldn't do it. So, you know, I just think the bigger picture is, you know, Mark Andrews, especially coming off of last year, you know, in my mind, I would put him at 1 and 1A. You know, I think what, you know, Travis Kelce did was right up there. Again, you know, what they did in the playoffs and obviously that great game against the Bills, didn't really do as well against the Bengals. However, you know, you talk about a game of a lifetime and the way they just took over in overtime against the Bills, you know, that was sweet. That was awesome. So, you know, Mark's star maybe lost a tiny bit of luster because they didn't, you know, get a chance to show off in the playoffs. But, you know, George Kittle, I think, you know, he's solid. He's strong as far as his movement and stayed relatively healthy. Missed a little bit of time. But, you know, again, I think for him, he definitely is that third guy. I would put Darren Waller 4 and then Kyle Pitts, you know, talent. Sure. He probably is the best talented guy out there, but I'm talking production and what you've done. I think Kyle, you know, has certainly room to grow. I'll put Kyle at 5. So yeah, Kadri Ismail's top 5 compared to Darren Waller's is a little bit different, but Mark Andrews is going to be up there on the list. I would say just because, and we're splitting hairs, Travis Kelce and the playoffs and all that, I'm saying he's 1, Mark is 2, but not by much. Definitely, then there's George, Darren, and Kyle Pitts. That's how I would view it. And, you know, I think kudos to Darren. I'd be curious to see how things look for him now that Davante Adams is going to be, you know, the go-to receiver for that ball club. I mean, he's going to be like, he should be living large because that double coverage and all the other things, that's going to go by the wayside and everybody's going to be fixated on Adams. That should give him a chance to really, you know, enhance his game.
Yeah, and your tight end rankings, Q, the exact same as mine. So we're on the same wavelength with that. It's very close to me between Kelce and Andrews. But Kelce has had, I believe, and I talked about it yesterday, 6 1,000-yard seasons consecutively and everything that he did. Now, you're right, Mark Andrews. I think if you ask me who was the best tight end in the league last year, it was Andrews. Andrews had the best season. He was the best tight end in the league last year. But who collectively overall, I'll give it to Kelce just barely because of the track record. But he was interesting because last season, Mark Andrews actually didn't get off to like this super fast start or anything. It was really the Colts game where I think he really turned it on. And it was funny because I did bold predictions that week and I had him. He didn't really have that strong start. I had him at 150 yards and 2 touchdowns. He had 149 in 2 touchdowns. So I was 1 yard off. I still take credit for it. But part of the thing between Kelce and Andrews is I think what makes Andrews so spectacular and the stats that he put up is the fact, well, last year it was more of a pass offense, but he's in more of that run-heavy bully ball offense where he was in, you know, 2019, 2020. Kelce in that Chiefs offense with Tyreek Hill, who's now in Miami. Obviously, you have Mahomes slinging the football. The offenses, I mean, they're really different.
That's the cool thing about what makes Mark, you know, that top guy, or at least in a conversation, top 2, and depending on how it looks this year. I know bully ball seems as though it's not pass friendly. It's tight end mismatch friendly. And I think when the offensive line had its struggles as far as trying to find, you know, the replacements for Ronnie Stanley and just the way Villanueva, he goes over there and does, you know, an admirable job. But, you know, even at the start of the year, he kind of had his struggles, which I think affected Mark. I think overall, when bully ball is at its finest, you know, that's where a tight end in this offense can feast. And then you add in, you know, the likes of a Mark Andrews, talent-wise, bruh. Like stretching the field, creating mismatches down the middle of the field, what we call the deep over route, going from, you know, one side of the field on the hash, climbing up to about 25 to 30 yards down the field, and on the far side of the field, you know, he just makes a living off of those type of routes. And I think for what they do offensively, you know, it shows he's a extremely productive guy. I know Travis is going to be, you know, heavy in the option routes, which he makes a killing off of. And Patrick Mahomes is the ultimate, you know, extend the play kind of a guy. And so I think for, you know, what Travis Kelce has in the offense that they run, you know, it suits him perfectly. But I think for what Mark Andrews does and what this offense does and bully ball and featuring a tight end, and, you know, I think he's in a perfect offense for himself and his skill set.
And you mentioned bully ball. I know the misconception, or one of the conceptions, is, well, they're only going to run the ball, and that's all that will happen in the bully ball offense. But I think what's so good and what we saw, like going back to 2019, even 2020, was the play action game works so effectively when the running game is effective. And you can put on, I know the three tight end sets we saw in 2019 with Andrews, Boyle, and Hurst, teams can't put on six defensive backs in those situations. They'll get swallowed up. And the Ravens will just say, all right, you're putting out 180, 200 pound guys, six of them. We're just going to put Patrick Ricard out there. We'll run it with Gus Edwards, J.K. Dobbins. And then when teams start to adjust to that and put out bigger personnel, the Ravens can use the play action. We saw the success that Andrews had in that offense. And so I think you're right, Q. He's in an offense that suits his skill set. I wouldn't say, I'm not going to say he wouldn't succeed in a pass heavy offense too. He's very versatile in that role. But I think even though he is in what could become in 2022, back to that bully ball run heavy type offense, it doesn't mean they're not going to throw the ball and use him as the asset and just the phenomenal player that he is. So yeah, Andrews is someone who, not five in my opinion. I think he's up there at two. It's almost like the 1A, 1B as you talked about, Q, but all in all, a very talented player. And when we get back here on Locked On Ravens in our second set, we're going to be diving into the ceiling of this team, talking about what could increase that ceiling, potentially how far they could go in the playoffs as well. So be sure to stay tuned. Still a ton to talk about here on the show. First, though, I do want to tell you a bit about Bet Online. And Bet Online is the number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. You can find all the latest sports developments, league reviews, and news, including Major League Baseball, which is in full swing right now. And Bet Online is your continued source for all your sports wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. And BetOnline.net remains the best spot for all your sports scores, podcasts, and news this season. BetOnline.net is the fastest and easiest way to check in on all your favorite sports and events, including MMA, boxing, and golf. As well, visit today, use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. BetOnline, where the game starts. We're back. Our second segment here are Locked On Ravens. Kevin Allstriker still here with Kadri Ismail. And Q, people are excited about the Ravens this year, the depth that they have brought in, the pieces, both through free agency and the draft, that have been added, and the returning players as well. I think they, again, I talked about balance earlier in the week, a very balanced roster, but people I think are kind of going back and forth on what is the ceiling of this team. And I think, I want to start with the AFC, because we saw in 2020, the Ravens were 11-5 and they almost didn't make the playoffs. It came down to like the final week or two where you're thinking, oh, is an 11-5 team not going to make the playoffs this year? Like, and it happened. There was, I think, what was it? One or two teams that didn't make the playoffs at 10-6. And it's unbelievable this year. Hugh, I think there could be like four or five AFC teams that are really, really good that just don't make the playoffs because of how stacked the AFC got, especially in that AFC West.
The AFC, in looking at it from top to bottom, clearly has some talented teams. This is where I push back a little bit on the offseason talk, because we get fascinated by all the roster looks and the names, but until you develop that chemistry, until you have healthy guys, hint, hint, last year when you and I were sitting there like, oh, buddy, we might as well go ahead and book our flights right now to L.A. because we going to the dance. And then sure enough, you just started looking and you're like, what? Oh, my God. Injury? What? Injury? What? Injury? What? What? You know, and next thing you know, you're looking at this team hemorrhaging and the rest is history. I think for what we've seen on paper, yes, absolutely. There's this mindset of AFC, you know, superiority, and rightly so. But I would throw caution to the wind just as far as trying to, like, you know, oh my gosh, like, this is the best thing ever. So far on paper, that's all we can talk about. But I think for the AFC North, for example, Yeah, I mean, Ravens are looking really good. I love what Eric DaCosta has done in the offseason, draft, tooling, and tinkering, and putting in different free agents. But no one is talking about the Bengals. Bengals went to the dance. So I'm like, man, they still got some talent, and we still got to figure out a way to stop said talent. So let's not go ahead and get ahead of ourselves. You look at what Mike Tomlin, dude hasn't had a losing season. He doesn't even know what that means. So he also had number 7 under center. That's going to be a different change. And now how is that going to look? But I know they got a good defense. I know they got a good defensive coaching staff. So that's going to be a challenge. Yeah, I think the elephant in the room is the whole Deshaun Watson thing. And, you know, I know I was kidding as far as a lot of the traditional or typical Browns. You know, everybody always jumps on their bandwagon, all the prognosticators. And I love, like, oh, yeah, they won the offseason Super Bowl. But right now, I mean, they are in a state of dysfunction because you don't even know who's going to be their quarterback. And is it Jacoby Brissett who they're just going to ride and die with? Or what are they going to do with Baker? Are they going to try to, you know, make peace with Baker Mayfield and go from there? All that being said, that's the AFC North. And then you go around to the other teams and other divisions, whether it be the AFC West. And, you know, okay, you got Russell Wilson over there now. But, you know, how are they going to look in Denver? You know, all the different, you know, strategies or combinations of teams and what it looks like. Devontae Adams, is he really going to gel in Las Vegas? Okay, we'll see. What are the Chargers are going to be looking like? You know, obviously, they have some really good talent on paper. Again, they got their QB. So hallelujah voice to that. My point is, when it comes to this season, I think it's one of those cases where we got to sit back, buckle up, and, like, get ready for a ride. I think it's going to be a fun, adventurous season. And even, you know, real quickly, just looking at the schedule, the first 4 games, it's all AFC opponents. First 5 weeks, it's all AFC opponents. So, the Ravens are going to have to come out and start hot and look the part, like, right away, just to keep themselves in the conversation, like you said, for the playoffs.
Yeah, and I know when talking about a ceiling cue there, so many things that factor into it. Obviously, health being one of the most important things, as you mentioned. We saw that last year, and just how it can impact ceiling versus floor. But speaking of just like how far they could go in the playoffs, if assuming they do make it there. So I guess I'll start there. Is your ceiling for them just a playoff team? Or do you think that this can be not just all their first round exits? And there's so much that goes into it, right? How do the guys mesh? What's the schedule looking like? What's the health? But do you see this team making a legitimate run to the Super Bowl based off what they have? Because based off their roster, I think there are going to be a lot of talented teams in the AFC, but the Ravens are in that conversation. And my personal opinion is I think they'll be right in the thick of it.
I think so too. I mean, the last 4 weeks in December going into January, you know, you're looking at Steelers, Browns. Not that the Falcons are a throwaway game, but, you know, it's an NFC opponent. But then you got the Steelers and Bengals. So you got your division right in front of you. And that's awesome. You start with a ton of AFC opponents. You end with a ton of AFC opponents, your division. I think if we look at these games and you're talking about playing against the Steelers at home, New Year's Day, you look at playing against the Bengals, okay, you got to go to Cincinnati. In my mind, this here sets you up for the playoffs, bro. Like, wow, you're going to have some intense football games. And if bully ball is in full display, meaning Stanley, Moses, Linderbaum, Zeitler, all right, we'll see about the other guy next to Stanley. But if we see those guys dominate, if we see Kohler and Likely, like, don't have the bright lights of rookie year, no, this is not a just make it to the playoffs type team. If McDonald can get Ojabo and Owe, you know, if Patrick Queen, like Mother of Pearl, comes alive, not saying that he hasn't been, but sure. Like, what are we talking about here? This isn't just playoff. This is divisional round, getting a victory, going to AFC Championship, and like, oh, who's next? What's up? How y'all gonna be? I think it's that type of, oh, don't let Marcus Peters be healthy. Are we talking about Fruit Punch, like really returning back to form? He's probably gonna be, you know, insane with his desire to create turnovers and all that. Man, Marlon's gonna be leading the way out the bruh. Like Hamilton, I just don't think he needs to stress. And I think he just goes out there and just play and learn. So I think there's enough of Williams, Marcus Williams. Are you kidding me? Like, did I even talk about the running game? Did I even talk about Lamar? No, because Mother of Pearl, they're going to be in the AFC Championship game if all things go well. I think that's the ceiling. Then it's like roll the dice. Let's see where we're at.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think obviously if you look at like, I do think winning the Super Bowl is like the ultimate like ceiling. Like that's the ultimate goal, the ultimate ceiling and everything. Making the Super Bowl too, I think a pretty realistic ceiling for them, and that's not saying they can't make it to the Super Bowl, is the AFC Championship game. I said that last year when everybody was at the time fully healthy. Obviously, we know how that went. But I think when looking at what they have, it's not just the pieces you surround Lamar Jackson with at wide receiver and on the offensive line. That's important. Don't get me wrong. But it's the defense you surround them with. It's the running game you surround them with. It's everything. The coaches you surround them with. It's not perfect, right? The roster is not a perfect roster, but it's one that I think maximizes Lamar Jackson's strength, can get him the ball back on the defensive side of the ball. All that's very important. So with how much talent is in the AFC, I personally agree with you, Q. I think an AFC Championship appearance is pretty a realistic ceiling at this point, based off of obviously health factors and obviously chemistry factors in too. But if we're talking about that, the Ravens are a team where I think people might look at their roster and say, oh, well, they really only added Marcus Williams and Morgan Moses and free agency and then Kyle Hamilton and Linderbaum. But I raise another point. And I say that besides the draft and free agency, they're adding back the players they're getting back from injury. J.K. Dobbins, we didn't see him the whole year. That's an add. Gus Edwards, didn't see him the whole year. Marcus Peters, obviously Lamar, Marlon Humphrey, some of those other guys missing some time in between. Those are other guys where I think, you know what, you can – they're not technically free agent additions.
Put some respect on his name and say right. Ronnie Stanley too.
That's right. I can't forget about Ronnie Stanley. It's a – that – I say it all starts up front. It all starts up front. And I think that for Ronnie Stanley – he's key. And if these guys have to miss a game, two games, six games to get back 100%, I will take that as long as they're not out on the field injured still. If they're 100% right. healthy, that's when you need them to be there. So it's really important. And we'll talk about this a bit in the third segment, Q. We'll dive into our final break. And when we get back, we'll talk about the floor and just what injuries could do to that floor if everything maybe doesn't go the way that we all want it to. So we'll be right back here on Locked On Ravens. We're back. Our final seven of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostrich still here with Kadri Ismail. And Q, you made a good point before our second break talking about Ronnie Stanley, the injury situation. I want to talk about that a bit now as we head into the floor portion of the show. Because obviously, I think the Ravens have set themselves up to have a pretty high floor overall based off of their talent, their depth. I feel a lot more confident in their depth now. How important is that for them? Let's say the injury bug hits in 2022, but not as much as it did. Let's say they're like half the injuries that the Ravens suffered in 2021 happened in 2022. So they're missing a couple key guys, not the amount that they had. What do you think that does for their floor? Do you think it lowers it a substantial amount? Can they survive that in your opinion? It depends on the players, but what do you think about that?
As long as the injuries are not up front defensively, in the AFC North, I think that's going to keep the floor from falling or from being totally pulled out from underneath them and them falling into the abyss. Defensive front, you're looking at, again, who you're going up against. Steelers aren't going to be putting a lot of pressure on their quarterback. Therefore, they're going to be, you know, trying to really run the ball, manipulate it. down the field that way. Cleveland, I think, again, you know, depending upon the Baker thing, but, you know, that's whatever. I think that they're going to have to really have a day of reckoning with them. Their NFC East, right? No, NFC South, Saints and Buccaneers and the Panthers. That three-game stretch, that I think is going to be really important because, again, it's a different brand of football. It's the physicality. It's, you know, what is it going to be? Are you getting to the quarterback? Are you getting to Tom Brady? Are you, you know, what is it like? You know, who's going to be the mainstay for the Saints and how are you pressuring them? Obviously, the Panthers, they're in a state of flux. Heck, who knows? We might be looking at a Baker Mayfield, the way they're talking about, you know, down in Carolina because of them not really fully filling it with Sam Darnold. So, you know, lots of unknowns, but from a floor standpoint, this to me, these games, these NFC games can really do some harm, you know, from an injury standpoint. Up front, just that alone, I think up front, I think that's where, you know, oftentimes teams lose it because you don't have that rotational depth. And now a Calais Campbell is playing too many minutes. When you thought, you know, maybe you had a chance to get Ojabo back and get him out there, maybe, you know, he just wasn't quite as sharp or something. You know, little things along those lines. That's where, knock on wood, none of that happens, but yeah, the floor. Greg Roman is trying to figure out the best way for his receivers to get involved, and you know they just hadn't gelled the way they needed to. So in key situations, defense just had a game, and you needed to, you know, step up and have a shootout. Mars just killing it, but you ain't on point with him, you know, that's where you're looking at the floor kind of and it not being a good scenario for you. But again, I think the floor can look pretty ugly. I mean, we didn't even talk about the Bengals again. From a floor standpoint, you get a D-line not being where they need to be. Patrick Queen don't step up. You know, now you're looking at your division. It goes through Cincinnati. And if they sweep you again, that's not good. So the ceiling, I'm loving it. I think it's realistic. I'm not even, you know, wavering off of that. But that floor, it could get ugly.
Yeah, it depends on the health situation, definitely. If everybody's able to stay healthy, if the injury bug doesn't hit them as nearly as hard as it did in 2021, we could see a team realistically hit that ceiling and still have a high floor of a double-digit win team, potentially, even if they suffer a couple ailments here or a couple things there also. But, Q, I feel like there might be, and this is an interesting point I wanted to get your opinion on, there might be like a couple safe moves the team could make to maybe raise their floor by a win, a half a win. I think part of that potentially is bringing in some veterans. Now, I know we've been talking for a while about the outside linebacker position dating back to before free agency, where we saw Za'Darius Smith come and then go in a pretty short amount of time. Ooh. But right now, the Ravens have enough Elway, Dalen Hayes, but it feels like the realistic option could be bringing back Justin Houston. I think his veteran presence, I think his ability that he showed on the field last year, although the numbers weren't necessarily pop off the box score amazing, he was still a solid player there. Maybe a veteran wide receiver is an option. Do you feel like adding a veteran at either one of those positions and maybe inside linebacker, although I don't really view that as a big, big need on this team, do you think that either outside linebacker or wide receiver or veteran there would raise this floor just because of the veteran presence and the stability?
Heavy heart when I say this, but, you know, Jalen Ferguson needs to be replaced. So, yeah, I think, you know, if you want to look at it in that regards, Justin Houston would make a great addition because he knows the team chemistry. You talk about that chemistry. You talk about you know, playing with your brother next to you, and you know him, he knows you. The locker room is a cohesive unit. I mean, I just honestly think that just makes perfect sense to me. You know what I'm saying? Receiver wise, I guess I hadn't really scoured the list of free agent guys. I think for this receiving core to get everybody off their backs, they're going to have to come out hot. And I hate to say it in a corny way, but preseason, like you don't need a veteran if you come out hot. So what we're looking at, you know, Tennessee, Arizona, and Washington. You got to come out hot and leave no doubt that you just don't need. We like who we got on the roster. That's what you want the coaches to say. That's what you want the scouts to say when they do the self-scouting and doing the 53-man roster. Otherwise, yeah, they're going to be like, all right, well, who's getting released? Who can fit in our system? Who wants to come here and be a part of what we're doing? Or even worse, you keep it as is. You play a hell of a lot of bully ball because Kohler and Likely are going to be taking up a lot of your reps. Okay, Patrick Ricard is going to play. We know Mark Andrews is going to play. Go ahead and let Kohler and Likely get hot, and you as a receiver don't. You want to talk about the ceiling being low as far as just personnel, not necessarily overall team schedule, but like being in the doldrums as a receiver, mother of pearl, that'd be a tough one.
And I know that when talking about wide receiver, the situation you kind of played out there, he reminds me a bit about what they did with Dez Bryant a couple years ago, where maybe what they would do is I think they're bought into their guys, right? I think they have confidence in Bateman and Duvernay and Prochet and Wallace and all those guys. I think they are bought in. But if they want to have an option on the back burner, Julio Jones, T.Y. Hilton, the Will Fuller, whoever, they could maybe bring a guy in for a workout. Maybe that's what they did with Jason Pierre-Paul. And they're saying, well, now we got to know you a little bit. We got to see you in person. If we need you in week 8 or week 10, we can bring you in if you're not signed, because we now have that familiarity. So if they do that with a receiver and either the receiver room isn't cutting it the way that they thought it would, or there's an injury there, maybe that's what they could do. And I still think that veteran receiver / outside linebacker would raise that ceiling because of just what they bring. But Hugh, I think finally, and I probably should have asked you the ceiling record prediction in the second segment. We'll do it all here. It's fine. We'll do, I guess, realistic ceiling record and realistic floor record. I'll give mine off the bat. I think realistic ceiling for me is a 14-3 record. I think there will be a couple losses here and there, maybe one that wasn't supposed to be a loss, and then a couple wins that you're like, oh, awesome, they won that game. I think 14-3 is realistic in terms of a ceiling. For a realistic floor, I'll say 10-7, 11-6. And this is fully healthy, so assuming everybody stays healthy and everything, I think 10-7, 11-6 is if you have like stuff go wrong, even when healthy stuff doesn't mesh. What are your ceiling and floor predictions realistically?
Floor, no question, 11-7. Like if you're saying what you're saying as far as the health wise, 11-7, no way you shouldn't. I'm saying you should be 5-0 first 5 weeks. I mean, schedule says it, but then you have some bumps in the road. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, you know, you got a fourth place schedule. These are some winnable games. Go 5-0. Feel good about yourself. Maybe some NFC opponents you just kind of didn't really care too much about, and they got one by you here or there. The ceiling, like, I mean, that 14 win sounds sweet. And that's just like, we rolling. Bully ball is alive. Defensively, our safety, they didn't do anything stupid with Chuck Clark. Last I checked, Chuck Clark's on the team, correct?
He is. That's right.
Okay. So, unless they make me an offer I can't refuse. Otherwise, yeah, like, bruh, teams can't figure out the defense. Adafe Owe training with my go-to coaches, man, he's just feeling good and just crushing things. Ronnie Stanley just like, yo, what's up? I'm back. And I'm back better than ever. Linderbaum just straight manhandling, beasting dudes up the middle. Gus the Bus doing his thing. Davis, he was holding it down well while both JK and Gus was kind of getting back on the mends. All that. You know, I just think, did we talk about Lamar yet? No, we didn't. So the ceiling is like unbelievable, which again, that means that Lamar gets unleashed in the playoffs. And that's why I think the ceiling realistically, yeah, AFC championship game, if all goes well.
Yeah, I think that the talent the team has, the depth, everything, it's setting up for a good season. Obviously, there's a lot more that goes into it than just what we see on paper. You got to get to the games, you got to play the games, and everything will sort itself out that way. But I'm excited. I think they've done a good job. Still, you know, not a perfect roster. They could maybe stand to add a couple of guys, as we talked about, maybe. But I think the ceiling and the floor, they have a pretty decently high floor overall. And even if they do finish with 10, 11 wins, maybe in this year's AFC, it might just not be enough, but it'll at least put them in the hunt for the playoffs. And even on their six-game losing streak last year, they started off so fast that they were able to keep themselves in the hunt until pretty much the very last week, despite all the injuries they had to go through and all that. So hopefully with a cleaner bill of health this year, Keel, it'll be a much better situation, and we'll hopefully be talking about that AFC championship ceiling, or even potentially more for talking about the ultimate ceiling for this team. McHugh, that's all I have for you here today. Thank you so much for joining me. This was a really fun conversation. I enjoyed this, and it was fun kind of looking towards the future a bit and thinking about what this team could really be.
Looking forward to the continual weeks as we just tick down the days, and we'll be talking a lot, obviously, as far as training camp too. So this is fun. This is now you get the smile on my face. That's going to be big because off-season guessing is about to be in the rearview mirror. Let's play some ball.
Yeah, we got training camp, we got preseason, cut down day. We'll talk about what the final 53 man could look like. And then we'll be at the football part, which I know everybody's waiting for. So I'm excited. Thank you so much again, Q. But that's all I have here today on Locked On Ravens. Thank you so much for tuning in. When we get back here on Monday, we'll be diving into more Ravens content. So be sure to stay tuned for that. And I will see you here on Monday.